This is the Harder Way Podcast, Easter edition, answering the questions today. Can we have Easter eggs and bunny rabbits and Peter Cottontail? What part of Easter is pagan and what part of it is actually Christian? And can we even use the word Easter at all? Let's get into it. Well, welcome to a special edition of the Harder Way Podcast. We're doing Easter. We're talking about Easter. I've been reading a lot about people having problems with Easter because of the pagan origins of Easter, because people eat too much candy on Easter, because of the Easter eggs and the Easter bunny, and churches are upset about, you know, some churches are doing Easter egg hunts and other churches are saying it's pagan to have Easter eggs involved with church services. And I'm just really confused, but I am blessed to have a daughter who is a theologian and she's done a ton of research on this. So we're going to have a little conversation and we're going to answer the questions about pagan origins, about names. We're going to answer questions about the bunnies, about the eggs, and we're going to see what do we have to cut out and what do we have to keep. But we're not going to talk about the candy because, Maddie, I'm keeping the candy.
Okay, we won't talk about the candy issue, but we can talk about this myth. And we're going to start out just by saying the myth of the pagan origins of Easter.
Wait, what? You're just going to go right there off the bat. Okay, well, let's hear it.
I'm going to start right in.
Make your case, scholar.
So Easter, the main thing that people always go to with the issue with Easter, before the eggs, before the bunnies, anything, is they go after the name.
Easter,
that there's something wrong with this name. So why do they say this? Well, they typically are associating it with the ancient Mesopotamian goddess Ishtar or with the old Germanic goddess Ostra.
Okay.
So we'll go back to that in a moment. But what we should say is messing with the holiday and saying there's something wrong with the holiday simply because of the name is a little bit silly.
It seems really important to most people.
It does seem like it would be important, but here's the thing that's interesting about Easter as well. It's only called Easter or something that sounds like Easter in English and German and a couple of the other Germanic languages, but in the vast majority of the world, the word for Easter is related to the Greek word Pascha.
So in the other 5,000 plus on Earth, if they have a word for Easter, it's related to Pascha, which I believe that is Hebrew for Pascha or Passover.
Yeah, the Greek word Pascha
came
from the Hebrew word Pesach, which is Passover.
Yes.
And so that you're gonna want to remember that later, because this idea of the word for Easter coming from the word for Passover, we're going to swing back around to that. But let's start with the idea that Ishtar is where we get Easter.
Oh, yeah.
So Ishtar was this ancient Mesopotamian fertility goddess.
Love those.
Right. Yeah, really into that. She is not in any way related to Easter. And there is no scholarly information, no primary sources, nothing that is out there that draws any connection between Ishtar and Easter. Here's the issue here. This is a prime example of what is called in the language world a false cognate.
Okay.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, false,
language guy?
Yeah, false cognates are really when a word sounds like something in one language and then it has a word that sounds just like it in another language, but it means that it doesn't mean anything close. Mm-hmm. And some examples are like disfrutar. Disfrute to me always sounds like a negative thing in Spanish, like this is a bad thing, but it actually means like to enjoy.
Oh,
so yeah. So that, but that's not really a false cognate. It would be more along the lines of if, and all I'm thinking of ones right now that are bad words in one language and good words in another. So I'm not going to give any specific examples,
but the idea that you could have a word that is an obscene word in one language and then a totally benign word in another, you're not going to say we can't call it this because it must come from this word in Spanish that is a bad word. No, this didn't come from anything Spanish.
The verb to sew in Czech is the exact same sound of pronunciation as a bad word for going to the bathroom in English.
Wow, yeah.
So can you imagine? You're not allowed to sew because the origin of that word was a... it's literally potty language.
So this, it really just comes down to people saying Easter sounds like Ishtar, and then saying, well, she's related to fertility, and so that must have something to do with the eggs, and then they just kind of ran with it. But this really started to take hold, and a lot of these actually false ideas about the pagan origins of Easter really were invented by a guy named Alexander Hislop. He was a Scottish reverend, and he wrote a book that was called The Two Babylons.
Okay.
And so this was a book that was kind of an anti-Catholic book. And unfortunately, he didn't just, you know, dissect Catholic theology or try to make arguments about different things. He really just made up a whole bunch of stuff specifically about different holidays, because he was trying to make the point that the, you know, Catholics invented these holidays and they're actually demonic because they were worshiping these false gods.
Right, because their group of Christians in Scotland were called the Congregationalists?
Well, the Congregationalists didn't celebrate holidays. I'm not sure if he was a Covenanter or not, and they didn't celebrate holidays, but they did not celebrate holidays at all. And so he was trying to make this point that holidays were evil and were pagan.
Right.
And so he ended up making things up to sort of bolster his ideas. And so he was the one who really...
By the way, making up stuff in a theology book is evil.
Yeah, yeah, that's evil. Don't do that, you guys. So we can just put that one right away and say there is no connection.
So no Ishtar. What about Ostara?
So this is one where there is a possibility that there is a name connection, but there's also a very strong possibility that there isn't. But even if there is, we'll talk about why it's not an issue. So first of all, Ostara. So she was a old Germanic goddess that would have been, you know, in that kind of Northern European, England, right, Viking areas, all that. And she is only mentioned one time in historical documents, primary sources. There is one reference.
I think that's the Venerable Bede.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, interesting side fact, Bede is the translator into Old English of one of the oldest English, or maybe perhaps the oldest English fragment of the Bible that we still have to this day. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And that was in, would have been probably in the 8th century,
because
that's when he was up and about.
And I believe he went as a missionary to Northern Europe.
Yeah. So Bede, he wrote a document, and he referenced the goddess Ostara, and he referenced something that was called Ostara month, which is our April, basically.
Okay.
And so there is a possibility that the English name for Easter came from Ostara month, because it was the name for April.
Oh, so they weren't calling it the goddess Ostara. They were saying, like, oh, it's time for April.
Yes, the April holiday.
Like we say 4th of July, but we're not trying to say Julius Caesar, because July is named after Julius Caesar, right?
Exactly.
Or August.
August for Augustus.
And, yeah. You were not invoking their names. 4th of July is an American holiday, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. So even if it does come from that, there's no connection between Easter and the pagan goddess, because Easter was celebrated before that. And then remember, this would only be in English and German and a few other languages, and every other language, it's Pascha, right? So the other interesting thing about Ostara, remember I said it's only one place where she's referenced. That means that all of these stories that you've been hearing online about the Ostara, the celebrations and festivals for Ostara and the legends of Ostara are all completely made up. This whole idea of the legend of Ostara, and she turned a bird into a rabbit, and then the rabbit started laying colorful eggs. That is genuinely just made up.
So not just the legend is made up, but it's made up in recent history by people who were kind of basically following in the footsteps of old Reverend Alexander Hislop.
Exactly.
Making up history in order to make their point.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just sounds good to them.
Yes. Yeah, there is no evidence that there was any sort of legend of Ostara. That's all completely made up. There's not even anything that makes any connection between her and rabbits and eggs or anything like that.
Wow.
So that's first and foremost. So let's talk about, though, the other theory, which I think I would lean towards this theory,
okay,
about where we get the word for Easter.
Okay. And I'm leaning where you're leaning.
Okay, cool. So remember, you know, we've mentioned a couple of times already that in the majority of languages, the word for Easter is a derivative of the Greek word Pascha, which is their translation of the Hebrew Pesach, which is the Passover holiday. So in Anglo-Saxon, which is basically pre-English.
Yeah, it's the early, it's early English before in 1066, the Normans invaded and they brought French with them. And so our modern English is Anglo-Saxon mixed with French. Mm-hmm. And then it went through a shift in the vowels. So if you want to hear what like English sounded like before the vowel shift, listen to Scots, you know, and the way they pronounce words. But so there's been a French infusion and then a language shift to get us, or a vowel shift to get us to our modern version of English. Anglo-Saxon goes back before that. You can read it somewhat. It's very Germanic.
Yes, very Germanic. And so a lot of the words that we use in English, their etymologies can be found in Anglo-Saxon ultimately, because they come from that Germanic line as opposed to words that were infused from French or some of the Romance languages. Right. So the Anglo-Saxon word for Passover was Easter Freiostag.
Okay.
E-A-S-T-E-R, right there.
Easter Freiostag.
Yes. That was the word that they used for Passover.
Okay, well, Freiostag sounds like Friday.
Sounds like Friday, actually. Right. Interestingly enough. And remember, we talked about not just going by the names of things, because if that was the case, then we would have to get rid of our days of the week.
Like Wednesday is Wednesday. Torstag is Thursday, mm-hmm. Thursday. And then Friday will be Freya's Tag, or I think in Old English it was Frigatag, mm-hmm. Frigadag.
Because there were actually two goddesses, Frigg and Freya, and there's a disagreement as to whether they were ultimately the same or if they were actually two slightly different.
Some even argue if goddesses. Odin and Woden were the same, which is mm-hmm. a lot more. And so I think it's probably just those old gods made it to the England and then their name, their pronunciation changed a little bit. Probably
exactly. So ultimately, though, this word for Passover has Easter right there in the beginning.
Right there at the front.
And remember, in all of these other languages, the word for Easter comes from the word for Passover. And we see in German, actually, their word for resurrection, which is the word that used to be used for Passover. Now there's a different word for it because, you know, they wanted to be a separation between Passover and Easter, right? Was Auferstehung. Mm-hmm. And that is the word for resurrection. And that's, you know, Alfster very clearly can see that language Easter. Connection with Easter. And so there is actually a very strong argument to be made that Easter doesn't come from Ostra month at all, but actually comes from the Old English and Old Germanic words for the Passover.
Wow. So it's our English version or progression from Pesach or Pascha. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot more sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would say this, you know, when we talk about hermeneutics and interpreting the Bible, you always say if something makes plain sense, seek no other sense. And that makes plain sense. That's the most, well, as I'm looking at those words and I see Auferstehung in German, Aufster, I can see that Easter. And when I hear it in Anglo-Saxon, Easter Freiestag, I can see that Easter at the beginning and I can see its connection to the Aufster. Mm-hmm. And so it really makes sense. In the most logical sense, it is just a mutation of the word. And if you don't think languages mutate, look at the King James Bible and then listen to the way we speak today. 500 years, there's been a lot of mutation of the language. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. What about that next? What about the Easter bunny?
Now, this one's interesting. Again, remember all this stuff about the legend of the bunny coming from Austria. We've established that's made up.
Okay.
Okay. The Easter bunny was actually invented by German Lutherans.
I just want to say I'm a little offended. We should call him by his proper name, Peter Cottontail.
What's his official name?
Yeah.
he was actually invented by German Lutherans. He was actually a hare, because remember, there's actually differences between hares, rabbits, and bunnies.
Yeah, and interestingly, if you see that word Haas, H-A-A-S, associated with Easter, that's the German word for hare.
Interesting. Isn't the name of the one company that sells the egg dye?
Yeah, it is.
Interesting.
It is. And in fact, I learned that from Bugs Bunny.
Oh, Haas and Pfeffer?
It was some Haas and Pfeffer. Was.
So the Easter hare was invented by German Lutherans in the 19th century, and it was because they were the same people that kind of created Santa Claus as we know him. You know, we'll do another episode on that in December about the history of Santa Claus.
Oh, that'll be cool. I'm
excited. But as we know him in America, really came to be in the 19th century from the Germans. And most of our American holiday traditions actually come from Germans around that time that were moving to America, because holidays were not really a big thing in the United States, because the United States was by and large a Protestant country, and the Protestants that were coming from the British Isles, a good portion of them did not celebrate holidays. The only ones who would have been the Anglicans, but most of the people that came over, you know, all of the Scottish people that were Presbyterian and the Congregationalists and the Puritans, all of those people didn't celebrate holidays.
Wow.
So they didn't really have American holiday traditions. And then when you had, you know, the different Catholic groups coming over, they kind of did their own thing. But American culture didn't get their own kind of holidays until these German Lutherans and Scandinavian Lutherans were coming over around that time period and showing what they did for these holidays.
Okay, so what you're saying then is that bunnies are of pagan in origin, and so no bunnies.
For sure. So that was something that you can argue, should we have, you know, an Easter bunny on Easter or not? Is this a good or bad thing to do? You can argue about that if you want. But there isn't an argument to be made that you shouldn't do it because it's pagan or has its origins in pagan festival or with a pagan goddess. It was something that was innocently invented because, honestly, it was invented by the parents who said, we get our kids to behave really well during the Christmas season because they have the incentive of Santa Claus. We should do something similar for Easter. So the kids were told, oh, you better behave or the Easter bunny won't bring you any presents.
So that's where we get our Easter basket from.
Exactly.
Okay, but so why a bunny? How was the association of bunnies made with Easter?
So there's two things here about bunnies and Easter. The first of them is really just a common sense thing, which is that bunnies, hares, rabbits, they're all around in the spring. And in Germany specifically, they have a season in the spring when all of the hares come out. Because in Germany, they have hares. And in America, we have primarily bunnies. We also have rabbits, but more so bunnies. So that's why it became an Easter bunny.
Okay.
In America. But the hares were just around during spring. And so that was just kind of a thing, like, oh, they're associated with spring.
Okay.
You know, in this, it could have just as easily been a chicken, right? Chickens are associated with spring.
Right.
But there's actually also an argument to be made that hares and rabbits actually have been used throughout time as Christian symbols. So a rabbit was historically used as a symbol for Mary, the mother of Jesus. And it was because rabbits were representative of purity, because they were white, and virginity, because it was believed at one point that rabbits spontaneously gave birth.
Now, when I was a kid, we raised rabbits, and I will tell you, I knew that they didn't spontaneously give birth, but I will tell you that sure seemed like it.
Understand why the ancient Greeks thought that.
So the ancient Greeks thought that rabbits gave spontaneous birth. So
they became associated with virginity.
So there may have been associated with other religions and other pagan things, but Christians also, having that thought process at the time, associated rabbits with virgin birth.
Mm-hmm. Virgin birth and the purity of Mary.
And the purity of Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
There's another one that's really interesting, and you can look this up, the three hares.
Right.
And there are many windows dating back to as early as I think the 5th or 6th century that depict this image of three bunnies or pairs basically chasing each other to where they're all connected as one. They all have two ears, but they're one of their ears goes in to form an inner triangle shape.
Uh-huh.
And they're all connected and chasing after each other to where you can't tell where one ends and one begins. Now, what in Christianity would you think that would be a symbol of?
The perichoretic relationship of the Trinity. Trinity. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Three people, three who's, one what? Three people, one God. Yeah.
So you're saying we're a Trinity symbol.
So you're saying the hares, the rabbits, the bunnies, were in a circle around each other, were actually an early symbol of the Trinity?
Yes.
An icon?
Mm-hmm.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So all of that being said, rabbits, hares, bunnies had been used in Christian symbology, in Christian art, were associated with the Trinity, with Mary, with different Christian concepts. And then beyond that, they're also associated with spring because they're around during the spring, which was the time period that Easter took place. Because unlike Christmas, where it is a little harder to determine exactly when Jesus was born, we know the time of year when Jesus was crucified and resurrected because it was associated with Pesach, the Passover.
Right. And you can literally go on a computer right now and you can wait till our podcast is over, but you can go in and say on what was the date that Jesus was crucified in this year? And it'll tell you, you know, if you say AD 33, if you believe he was born in the year zero, then it's, you know, it's going to be, I think, April 3rd.
Yeah.
But you can go back to, you know,
and figure out the exact date
By running the calendars backwards. It's not hard to do. So yeah, we know that.
So all that being said, the bunnies, whether you want to do an Easter bunny with your kids or not, or you want to do an Easter egg hunt or not, that is up to you and your conviction. But just know that they are not around because of pagan origins. But let's talk about the eggs real quick.
Well, hang on. Let's not be stressed about the bunnies then. That's nice. And bunnies are soft and fluffy and
I'm a fan of bunnies.
Tasty.
I wasn't going to go there. But I would not want to eat one.
But yeah, I think, wow. I mean, isn't that a relief to know that, okay, I can say Easter and we can have like little bunnies and stuff around and we're okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're not offending the Lord. You know, it's probably more of a heart matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but what about the eggs? Because that eggs are weird. I'm just going to say this. I told you we raised rabbits, and I do know that the eggs came from our chickens and our ducks. They did not come from our rabbits. I checked.
Yeah, bunnies don't lay eggs.
Okay.
You are right.
Okay.
Sorry, Cadbury Bunny. So eggs, for a very, very long time, have been associated with Easter. Number one is because to anyone who is thinking logically, an egg is a perfect representation of new life and a perfect representation of resurrection.
Right.
Right? So that's, again, that's just a common sense thing. If you're trying to think of a tangible example or a tangible representation, an egg makes perfect sense. So for a long, long time, eggs have been associated with Easter because of that. So we also would want to say, though, that it also has to do with Lent. So
pockets.
Lent, L-E-N-T.
Oh, the 40-day
fast. Traditional fast before Easter.
Okay.
So in the Middle Ages, and this is still true for a lot of Orthodox Christians, the Lenten fasting was very intense to the point where you were basically vegan for 40 days. You really were not supposed to have any kind of animal products, which included eggs.
Right.
So what the people would do is they would hard boil the eggs because that would be a way to preserve them. Because if not, all of the eggs that your chickens are laying during that time, because remember, it's spring, so all the chickens are going to be laying eggs, those would all go completely to waste.
Right. Because they can only last, you can keep an egg for a pretty good amount of time on the counter and room temperature, but they will go bad.
Mm-hmm.
So you hard boil them and that preserves them much longer. Again, you don't have refrigeration.
Right.
Okay. And then what happens to them?
And then they would eat them on Easter, which is when Lent is over.
Right.
And so that was another way that eggs began to be associated beyond just the fact that they were used as a representation of new life and resurrection. It was also just a matter of We haven't been eating animal products. We have these eggs. We want to preserve them. Okay, let's eat them once Easter comes and we're allowed to eat animal
products. We don't think about in America the fact that, you know, food was a matter of survival and preserving food was a matter of survival. And you didn't get to eat what you wanted very often. You ate what you had. And so you might think, oh, we're breaking our fast. We're going to have steaks and we're going to have baked potatoes and all these kinds of things. You may have just been rejoicing in the Lord that you had some hard-boiled eggs and you had a whole stash of them when you were breaking your fast and you could just eat all you wanted that day.
Absolutely.
Because how often even back then were they able to eat till they were full? So all it's
hard-boiled. There were probably many people that never ate till they were full.
Except for maybe on Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay, last thing. Why is there only one day a year when we celebrate Easter?
So that's the thing. If you're only celebrating Easter one day a year, that is a problem.
Why?
Because as Christians, we should be commemorating Easter on every single Sunday. Every Sunday is Easter Sunday. And as Christians, biblically, ultimately, that's what we're called to, is gathering together on the Lord's Day on Sunday and celebrating, you know, the resurrection, or we can say Easter, every single Sunday.
But you can go all the way back to the writings of Justin Martyr from, like, I think around somewhere between 125 and 150 AD. And he was saying, as an explanation of why Christians meet on Sunday, he said that because it's the first day of creation and we're new creations, and because it is the day of the resurrection and we're gathering to celebrate the resurrected Jesus weekly.
Absolutely. So if you're not celebrating that weekly, that's an issue. Because whether or not you choose to celebrate the Easter holiday, right? This year it's March 31st. That is completely a matter of personal conviction, because there are some people who feel convicted. You know, they read the passage that refers to not making different days special or whatever. Right. And they say, you know what? I want to have the Lord's Day, Sunday, be the only special day. I'm not going to do the whole holiday thing.
Right.
And they apply that unilaterally, kind of just across the board.
And they're fully convinced in their own heart. And so I think in that their hearts are right with God. So they're okay.
Absolutely. And so our point in doing this here today is not to say everyone needs to celebrate Easter, because we know that we're not commanded to set one Sunday a year apart as a special Easter, right? We have our little Easters every Sunday, but we're not commanded to do that. But we wanted to share that it is something that you are free to do.
Ah, yes.
It is not something that would be sinful, right? It is not something that has pagan origins and that is going to, you know, lead you astray into worshiping false gods. All of these things, these myths, these conspiracies, and I use the word conspiracy because, as we discussed, there are a couple instances of people genuinely just making things up for their own benefit. So if you want to celebrate Easter, celebrate Easter. If you want Easter to be like every other Sunday, and you are going to go and fellowship and do all of your other Sunday things, that's completely fine too. But be fully convinced in your own heart and in your conviction of the Holy Spirit. And don't let yourself get confused by all of this fake conspiracy, pagan origins mumbo jumbo.
That's amazing. And so I'm excited because when we have Easter eggs with the grandkids, we're gonna point them to Jesus through those Easter eggs. And when we see the bunnies, we're gonna point them to Jesus through bunnies and through the Virgin Mary. And we're gonna that's exciting. All that symbolism. I love symbolism. And all that symbolism we can use to edify people and to point them to Jesus. And hey, my recommendation, celebrate Easter every Sunday. Have a big celebration of Easter once a year, but live out the truth of Easter every moment of every day, because
he's the best advice.
He is risen.
He is risen indeed.
All right. Happy Easter, guys.
Happy Easter.
If you found this edition of the Heart Awake podcast to be a blessing or encouraging or edifying, please take a moment and share it with somebody you know so that it can bless them as well. We'd also like to invite you to become a regular listener to the Heart Awake podcast, where we learn about how to live in America, an increasingly hostile culture,
through the lessons and the teachings of persecuted brothers and sisters around the world. Well, God bless you. We'll catch you next time.